Here's the story of how you can win a trip for two to LA to visit the iconic Brady Bunch house. Not only visit the home, but spend the day there exploring and brunching with members of the Brady Bunch cast. If you remember, Kristen, Michelle, and I had the time of our lives when we got to visit the home back in September. It was truly a magical experience. And now you can have an experience like that too, alongside cast members from the show. Simply visit thebradyexperience.com to enter the Brady Brunch sweepstakes. And from now through January 31st, PCPS listeners can get four entries for the price of one. All you have to do is put PCPS in the add order note section of the shopping cart. And the goodness doesn't stop there. For every 10 purchases you make, you'll have the opportunity to tour the house on your very own. Just remember to put PCPS in the add order note section of your shopping cart. You can feel good knowing that a portion of your purchase goes to No Kid Hungry, a campaign to help end childhood hunger in America. So get those entries in and cross your fingers. Good luck, everybody.
The point here is that not just burnouts and hussies get VD. VD is for everybody.
You get VD, and you get VD, and you get VD.
Hello world, is a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the Big Wheel generation who gave a hoot and didn't pollute. We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we'll be saving those iconic television moments that shaped our understanding of social issues, civic responsibility, and maybe even added to our list of anxieties. The public service announcement. I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
For Generation X, public service announcements were more than just commercials. They were cultural touchstones that helped to shape our childhoods. These messages influenced our values, our anxieties, and even our sense of humor. From environmental warnings to the dangers of drug use, these ads left a lasting impact on our worldview and earned a permanent placement in our childhood memories. You guys remember these, right?
Oh my gosh.
They absolutely.
Yeah.
They scarred me.
Right. I mean, that's just, yeah. We'll talk about it as we go through this episode, but our generation, it was, let's scare everybody to death.
That's how you get things done.
Fear is the motivator for this generation.
Yeah. Right. Crazy. How do you parent? Fear.
Yeah. Scare the
fear.
Yeah.
You scare them. We're scared straight, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, did you guys ever stop to wonder just when or why the heck PSAs began?
Well, yes, tell us, Michelle.
Well, wonder no more. I'm here to tell you. Actually, I think it's pretty interesting. So public service announcements have actually been around since World War II, when the Ad Council, the Advertising Council, was formed. And the Ad Council originally consisted of radio broadcasters and advertising agencies that all collaborated to create messages to support the war effort. For example, their Loose Lips Sink Ships campaign encouraged people not to share information about military activities. But yeah,
and that's then, in textbooks. Like, you learn about that in your history class.
I know. Mm-hmm. Or in on wonderopolis.org. So PSAs did not end when the war did. No, they did not. And we know this because we were so bombarded with them during our TV watching. And talk about an impact. We not only can still recite many of the lines, but the images that we were seeing are burned into our brains all these decades later. Now, does that mean none of us littered or used drugs or set fires? No. But I bet when you were doing any of those things, you were thinking, like if you're a little fire starter, I bet you were thinking about Smokey Bear, right? Or if you're littering, you're thinking of that tear, or you're thinking of Woodsy Owl, you know?
Yep. The tear. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not even going to say just the tear.
No. That's all you have to say. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah.
That's all you have to say. And we all know what you're talking about. So as we love to do here at PCPS, we wanted to ask you, our listeners and followers, what your most memorable PSAs were, and then do a little of our fun PCPS math to come up with the top 10. And as usual, you all had feelings. But before we get to that countdown, we wanted to share several that maybe didn't make the top 10, but either hooskerdooed us or were just plain weird. We have to talk about those.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the obscure but equally disturbing, I think, would be the category that maybe some of you remember. So the first one I want to share with you is just a cartoon panel that appeared in comic books in schools in 1985. And some smartass titled it, Boo Boo is Propositioned. It's a cartoon panel. Yes. Let me set the scene for you. It's just a single panel. And this went out in schools, mind you. It's a cartoon panel that shows Yogi Bear surrounded by the Flintstone babies. All the grown-up Flintstone characters, but drawn to be children for some reason. I don't know why we need to have them be children. And Yogi seems to be holding court while the Flintstone babies confess all of the scary things that have happened to them. Baby Fred Flintstone says, "Guess what? My friend offered me a cigarette."
Oh, no.
And baby Betty Rubble are flanking poor Boo Boo Bear, who has had a real bad scare. And he says, "After school, a stranger offered us a ride home."
That's very scary.
And Yogi looks legitimately concerned that his buddy old pal almost got in someone's van. It's a little fractured. We've got peer pressure / cigarettes, and we've got stranger danger.
It's a lot.
I feel like they should have just picked one and stuck with it.
Yeah, was there quicksand, too?
That would be probably in the next panel, I'm guessing.
Okay.
Don't touch the quicksand.
Uh-huh.
This next one is called VD is for Everybody, and it's from 1969. And it's a little ditty. It's adorable. It'll put a little bounce in your step. The point here is that not just burnouts and hussies get VD. VD is for everybody.
You get VD, and you get VD, and you get VD.
And so they play this peppy little jingle featuring all the people that VD is for, like a violin player, a librarian, an old professor, a mom and dad playing with his kid in the oceans, a ballet dancer, and a baby.
Wait, what?
Gosh. Well, yeah, remember the baby could get it when it came through the birth canal.
Yes.
Oh, right.
Baby.
It could be blind if you had
something. That's right. It could be blinded by your VD.
But it's so funny because this is not ominous at all. It's like, and a baby can also get VD. Take it down a notch. Let's get dark, okay? Because there's this horrifying number from Great Britain teaching us not to fly kites around electrical towers. Was this a big problem?
Yes.
It was for real?
Oh, not electrical towers, like power lines.
Apparently,
for sure.
In Great Britain, this was a big problem. And it ominously follows a boy climbing the tower to retrieve his kite that has gotten snagged in the wires. The camera pans to these signs that say, "Danger, lots and lots of voltage." And then the tower explodes in a waterfall of sparks, and the boy's flaming body hurtles toward the ground like a rag doll. I'm serious.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Brits. They just cut to the chase, don't
this
they?
This must have been a big problem in England because they followed that up with an even more graphic version in 1989. This time, it's their football that gets caught in the wires, and they amp up the trauma by having the flaming boy's tiny little angelic brother run to save him, only to have him explode too.
Wait. How do we know it's the flaming boy's brother?
Because they say, "It's my brother, it's my brother."
Oh, yes. My God.
And they're like, "No,
So it's like if your the message I'm getting is that if you see your friend do it and they explode, don't go try to help them because you will explode too. Just let it be.
Let it be. And then the Beatles
should then they should have just started having the Beatles singing "Let It Be."
And the traumatic part of this one is that they don't show the little angelic boy blowing up. They just show the flames and they show the faces of the friends witnessing the little angelic brother blowing up. And they're like, no, angelic little brother blew up. It's really, really bad. But that's not all, you guys. There's another one. They did it again, this time with a frisbee. And this one featured a radio reporting that a young boy was killed while retrieving his frisbee today. And the announcer urges children to never retrieve their toys from an electrical substation. Instead, ask an adult for help. And then they show a boy very responsibly getting his soccer ball from a priest.
No, that is even worse. I'll take the blowing up, please. Yes. I'll risk it. Sorry. No, there's some good priests out there, I'm sure.
Not all priests. Hashtag not all priests. But not hashtag priests. A lot of priests.
Hashtag a lot.
Hashtag okay, a lot of wait. Priests.
I love how it's like ask for help and it would be really funny. Then you just see the adult blowing up.
Yeah. I mean, if logic is a thing, then yes, it would be the adult blowing up.
Right. I mean, I'm assuming it's like you call like these three numbers that's like power line emergencies or something.
Don't make your priest go in and get your soccer ball.
But you're right, Kristen, to have this many of them and to have them be so graphic, this had to be a very common occurrence.
Yeah, and they weren't learning from the first one or two because they had to keep the campaign going.
Right.
And are there substations like on every corner or in every park?
I know. What by every park.
Right.
By
every that's park. A lot of things getting caught.
Yes. Maybe do something about the substations.
Okay, but listen to this, you guys. There are two in particular that really scarred me personally when I was little, and I want to see if anyone else remembers these. Because I don't know, some of these might be regional, and I've never heard anyone else who knows of these. This would be California in the early 70s. So, all right, California people, if you grew up there, tell me if you remember these. The first one shows children playing in a junkyard, and one of them climbs inside an old abandoned refrigerator. And guess what happens? The door gets stuck. He can't get out, and he dies.
Yeah.
And I remember asking my mom, how does being inside a refrigerator make you die? And that's how I learned the word suffocate.
When you started saying it, it's like I knew what was coming next. But it also could be because one time we were at our babysitter's house and my sister and one of the older little girls were playing hide and seek. And she put my sister in the clothes dryer and closed the door.
No, don't do that.
And then she got out. But wait, we told my mom and my mom lost her mind. And I remember that like you will suffocate, you will die because you can't get any air. So you do not play in a dryer or a refrigerator or a,
So the second one is almost too horrifying to mention, but I have to. I have to find out if somebody else was scarred like me. Sometimes I wonder if it was a fever dream because who would conceive of this? Who would agree to film this? Today, it would come with a trigger warning. So I'll pause right here if you want to skip ahead 30 seconds because it features the image burned into my brain of a baby dead lying on the floor with a plastic bag over its head. This was on TV.
Okay, I know you said maybe it was a fever dream. I don't remember this, but I do know, again, do you remember? So you bring things home from the dry cleaners and sometimes you just put them in the closet and all those plastic bags were just hanging and they were hanging in my mom's closet. Mm-hmm. So again, my sister and I love to play in my mom's closet, like look at the shoes and whatever. And we got lectured and lectured and lectured about never playing around the plastic bags because they could go over your face. So I wonder if that really was a PSA and this was a big deal
I
at the time.
Yes.
Babies and small children were dying.
Yes.
But why would they put a picture of a
I'm not going to describe it for you because it's too graphic. And I don't know how they got the baby to lie there like that. I have no idea. And again, I was a child and I had to ask, what is this all about? And it was my cool aunt who explained this one to me. don't put plastic bags over babies' heads. And I was like, are people doing this?
Yeah, why?
Are people putting plastic bags on babies' heads? Why do we need a PSA? But it sounds like there was something about having dry cleaner bags in the closet or something.
Or just like laying on the bed and then you put the baby. Yeah. And don't forget, babies didn't, it was back then, it wasn't like put the baby in the baby carrier, the baby seat,
or the
safe. Mm-hmm. You laid your baby on the bed, you laid your baby on the couch, you laid your baby. So maybe it actually was happening
I think more frequently. Wasn't. Oh, you guys, I was so scared. I was so scared of this. And like anytime there was a baby in a plastic bag in the same room, I felt like it was my responsibility to save the baby. That.
Kristen's running in slow motion.
Yes.
She's ripping the plastic bag off.
But you guys, that image, who the hell decided it was a good idea to film that?
Well, let's throw it out to the listeners like you did earlier. But for this one especially, please email us at hello@poppreservationists.com or send us a DM because Kristen needs to know.
On a lighter note.
please.
We're going to get ready to move into our top 10. But I want to share a few that really Husker-dude me that got several votes, but they didn't make it into the top 10. And I want to see if you guys remember these, which I'm sure you do. It's just one of those things where I was like, oh my gosh, yes. Well, one is Riff. Do you guys remember the Riff campaign?
Reading is fundamental.
Reading is fundamental.
That's right. Yes, that's right. I loved that. And as soon as I saw Riff, I knew exactly what it meant. Much like I then remembered this campaign. Do you remember the tagline? A mind is a terrible thing to waste.
To waste. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. And it wasn't technically a PSA. It was an ad for, and I'm going to see if you remember, because I knew exactly who the ad was for as soon as I saw a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Do you guys remember?
I have no
idea.
When you said
that tagline, my first thought was that a PSA? So I must be getting there.
And people mentioned it as a PSA. I think it was more of a commercial and an ad for this particular organization, which I'm going to tell you.
Oh, it was an
organization. The United Negro College Fund.
Yes. Yes,
I do remember
right.
that.
It was the United Negro College Fund.
The last one, oh my gosh, when I watched it, I had to bring it up and watch it on YouTube. It was so funny. And I want to see if you guys remember this. It was an anti-smoking campaign ad where C-3PO catches R2-D2 lighting up. And at first he thinks R2-D2 is on fire. Then he quickly realizes he's smoking a cigarette.
R2 is smoking?
Yes, he is smoking. And C-3PO chastises him for it and lists all the ways that it can be harmful. And then C-3PO breaks a fourth wall and he talks to us. And he basically tells us all the reasons it's bad and it's not grown up to smoke. That was his message. Like,
it's
if you want to feel
grown up,
don't smoke.
It's actually smart, though, in the late 70s. I mean, to have Star Wars, just the phenomenon that it was. If you're trying to, you know, grasp onto anything that's going to really, like, you know, beat this message into kids, it's even if the kids aren't thinking, wait, that robot can't smoke. They're just thinking,
sure.
He's talking to me. C-3PO was talking to me.
Oh, yeah. And what Husker dude me was C-3PO seeing, so there's like smoke coming from behind this corner. And he's like, in his voice, I'm not even going to be able to do it, but what is that? And then, you know, he waddles over or whatever he does, C-3PO walk. And then, of course, there's R2-D2 and there's this smoke coming. But at that point, C-3PO just thinks that R2-D2 is on fire.
He's like short-circuiting or something.
And he has like this little hole in him. R2-D2 has this like hole kind of, I guess, where his belly would be. That's like where the cigarette kind of comes out.
There's an actual cigarette coming out of R2-D2? Yes. And it's coming out of his belly button?
Yeah, kind of like those awful scenes. Do you remember where the person couldn't stop smoking?
And they put it in there. Yes.
Oh, my God. And he put it in like in his little tracheotomy place.
Yes.
Oh, my God. In his throat. Oh, I definitely remember the people putting the cigarettes in their necks. And that, I'm surprised that didn't come up.
I feel like that might have been in one of those films we saw in school about, like, where you would see the black lung and everything.
Yes, and the plexiglass.
The shriveled up, like, raisin lung. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, you know, the trauma that brought me as a child of parents.
Of a smoker,
It was awful, awful.
Okay, can I bring something up here that I don't know if it qualifies as a PSA, but it might... I don't know what the purpose was. Did you guys all see the scoliosis movie in school?
Yes.
Okay, why? Why were they showing us a scoliosis movie? Is because you can't do anything about scoliosis, right? Oh, so it's not like a warning.
That's a whole nother trauma of my life. Yeah.
Yes.
Why would they? Mm-hmm.
What is that for?
Well, we
and
always
they would show
went,
the surgery, remember? And you could see the spine and all the muscles, and everybody
totally
was like, I'm
going
to barf.
Yes.
Why?
I don't know, because it was probably during like Health Awareness Week, which then we all had to march down in our lines to the nurse and bend over, cross your legs, bend over, touch your toes, and they rubbed the line, they rubbed your spine.
Oh, you, mm-hmm. I've shared my story about that. I still have trauma.
Poor Carolyn had a hump.
That's right. Carolyn had a hump.
Uh-huh. Yes. Oh,
oh
my
and it's
gosh.
So scary. And you thought you were going to be like Deanie.
Yes. I can't even. It was in front of all your friends. And you're the one who has to like go down a few times. And then like they call another PE teacher over or something.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know? Yeah. The PE teacher who knows what like
but
yeah.
I would
scoliosis
love to. What, it was probably the gym teacher. We probably saw this in gym. I would love to ask a 1970s era gym teacher. Why was that in the curriculum? Why
the
did we have to
that?
See the scoliosis movie? Why did it have to show us the surgery? When really, how many of us actually got sent to the doctor and ended up in a back brace like Deanie?
I had two friends that did. But at the same time, like, why would you show that? Because there's nothing you can do about it. It's not like smoking or whatever.
It's behavioral.
Like, you know, if you have
it's not
it,
a choice.
No.
You can maybe then see the movie or something, or they can give you a pamphlet. But the fear, of course, and then there's all this waiting, because then I get a note with me that says, your daughter should go to the orthopedic surgeon and get whatever. So there's all this like waiting time in there. And then you go and get x-rays, but then the x-rays have to get read and they have to read you the results. And so you're just seeing that movie and Deanie just spinning in your head.
Oh my God. And
honestly, guys, it is just amazing. I'm still on this planet.
I know. I know.
Have human bodies evolved now that scoliosis isn't really a thing?
You don't hear about
because
it.
Because you don't see anybody walking around in a brace.
No.
Also, or if scoliosis is still as common as a apparently it was in the 70s. Is there a different treatment for it now?
Maybe they've realized that mild cases are fine. So people with slight curves were fine, but people that had major like S's,
and now they, would
they
get
now
surgery.
Have surgery.
Yeah. They certainly don't show this movie anymore. Do they even screen for it anymore?
My kids never had it,
I don't think they do. Okay, listeners, if one of you out there, somebody listening right now, has a parent who was a gym teacher in the 70s, please ask that parent about the scoliosis movie and the screening and why it stopped.
Buckle up, everyone. We're getting ready to name your top 10. Coming in at number 10 is the crash test dummies.
Oh, yeah, they were fun.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know what? This is often considered one of the most successful public service campaigns in history.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And think about it. Those mannequin-like figures were subjected to the brutal realities of car crashes. Okay. Guys, do you remember like their bodies would go through the windshield? And I think it was like slow motion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then they'd be like all mangled kind of like their forms were in all these like unnatural positions. Oh my gosh, I do totally remember those. And it was like this visceral experience. Like you were seeing what would happen to a body if it was in this car crash. And you'd see what would happen to the car too. It would be all, the car would be mangled.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, of course, much like a lot of these PSAs we're going to talk about, the success of the campaign lies in its ability to tap into our primal instinct of fear.
Yeah.
So many of the PSAs that left their impact with us were because they scared the living bejesus out of us. We were so scared. It's possibly one of the most powerful motivators. And you guys, it was indeed motivating because, I mean, did we not start using seatbelts around those times and would not even think twice? Prior to that, I don't, you know, we couldn't find our seatbelt sometimes. Like, I'd feel like, oh, I need to wear my seatbelt in the back. And I'd try to stick my hand down the crevice. And it was all crumbly down there. You couldn't even get it. Exactly.
Or if your parents would, like, arbitrarily say, put on your seatbelt. And you'd be like, it was, like, the biggest injustice. Like, what? Oh,
right.
Why?
And I can't get it. And I cut my finger trying to go down there and find the thing.
And it really was around that time. You'll have to tell me what the years were. But there was a point at which I consciously put my seatbelt on and thought, from now on, this is what I do when I get in the car.
And those crash test dummy PSAs were so impactful that not only did it encourage us to buckle up, and indeed we did, it impacted the automotive industry to make safer cars. So it was powerful on many levels and had a big impact.
Well, and then there was legislation that came after that,
yeah,
where it was against the law to not wear your seatbelt. And there was a time, Mike always talks about how his mom's first car, she paid extra for seatbelts. Like, that was an option. You didn't have, the car didn't come with seatbelts.
Crazy.
And now we have a law that says you have to wear them.
Even with airbags, Vince, you still got to remember to buckle your safety belt.
Now you tell me.
You could learn a lot from a dummy. Buckle your safety belt.
Coming in at number 9 is, Kristen, what is it?
All right, we have a tie at number 9. But it's a categorical tie. And
okay,
that is between friends don't let friends drive drunk / drinking and driving can kill a friendship. These were very powerful. The first one features a bunch of drunk friends piling into a car with a jock in a letter jacket who insists he's okay to drive by slurring, "What's a couple of beers?" And then he gets behind the wheel. They're like, "Are you okay, man?" "Yeah, what's a couple of beers?" And then, boom, they all turn into skeletons.
That one, that I still, to this day, like, get the grossest feeling inside when I imagine that one.
That's some good art direction right there.
It's really good.
Yep. The second one shows two wine glasses cheersing, and then instead of clinking, they crash and explode into shards of glass. And you hear, like, the sound of tires screeching, and you hear the sound of a crashing. Then it's two beer glasses crashing into each other. And finally, two highballs come careening toward each other until someone's very responsible hand intervenes and stops one whiskey glass from crashing into the other. The metaphor being, it's your responsibility to keep your friends from dying. No pressure.
Exactly.
No pressure.
Gosh.
At all. Yeah. And actually, that, if you think about it, that is a choice. They didn't say, "We're going to tell kids not to drink and drive. We're going to tell kids to stop their friends from drinking and driving." That's another thing altogether. These ads started airing in 1985 and were designed to reach 16 to 24-year-olds because 42% of all fatal alcohol-related car crashes were with a 16 to 24-year-old age group.
Wow.
I am 17 years old when these come out. They are targeting me when this comes out. And I remember it vividly. And I remember feeling like they were very pointedly talking to my generation. And although we were very cavalier and we scoffed and we made fun of it like crazy. But it might have actually worked. Because by 1986, not might, it absolutely worked. It 100% worked. Mm-hmm. By 1986, 62% of young Americans reported that they were now more conscious of the dangers of drunk driving than they had been previously. And 34% refused to drink at all when they were planning to drive. That's a huge percentage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And by 1990, there was a 25% decrease in the number of drunk drivers killed in traffic accidents. And I would ask you, what is your children's attitude toward drinking and driving? It's a non-starter.
Right. If they don't, it's not even contemplated. And luckily now we have a lot of options of Uber and whatever.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm sure we all have said to our kids, like, if you're ever in a situation that somebody, you know, you call us, no questions asked, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's such a given, kind of like seatbelts, I feel.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a given that you wear your seatbelt. And I feel like, at least with my kids and stuff, it's just a given that you don't drink and drive.
When you look at the generational change that took place, I mean, it didn't just change over a generation. That campaign did change us too.
It did, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
The ones who were driving home wasted, absolutely wasted. Those same people now would never think of getting in a car.
Right.
I hope not. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think what happened with us, it's that you know you shouldn't be. It's like the awareness of the whole concept of this is a thing. Yeah, so the whole stigma of it and all of those things didn't really become anything until
this campaign.
Yeah, and MAD, when we had Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
Yeah, we do have to give all credit to Mothers Against Drunk Driving because they're the ones who started this whole thing, right?
Yeah.
And they work tirelessly. I have very distinct memories of babysitting on a Friday night in seventh grade. I'm 12 years old.
Yes.
And the dad would give me a drive home reeking of alcohol. Mm-hmm. Just yes. like a rag soaked in vodka is how he smelled. And he's driving me home. And I was.
Well, yeah, I remember
and the
that
dad
too.
Probably shouldn't be driving me home anyway. Like, let's have the mom drive home.
But yeah, at the same time, it was just like, that's what you did. Somebody drove you home and you got in their car and they were the adult. And yeah, so I think in that case, there was a huge shift with our generation with these ads and behavior.
Mm-hmm. Good for us, and thanks to Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
When friends don't stop friends from drinking and driving, friends die. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
Okay, how about the number 8 spot? I love this one. This is going to be fun. I don't know why I love it. It's very iconic. In the number 8 spot, we have Mr. Yuck, which is not spelled Y-U-C-K. It's spelled Mr. Yuck with Y-U-K. I don't know why. Mr. Yuck was introduced in 1971 by the Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh to deter young children from ingesting poisons, like the kind of poisons you would have in your house, like cleaning supplies. And they wanted to mark poisonous substances with a very recognizable symbol that would tell children, like, stop, this is poison, it will make you sick. And the designer of the sticker felt that the traditional symbol for poison, which was a skull and crossbones, that was a little outdated. He thought that by the 1970s, that symbol was associated with, quote unquote, swashbuckling pirates and buccaneers rather than harmful substances. It's true, but we still knew it was poison.
You did. Death. Yeah. Death.
Right?
Yeah.
Death.
Bones.
It meant death.
Bones.
Just because we like pirates doesn't mean that that doesn't mean death.
Right.
I distinctly remember my mom crawling under the sink and applying Mr. Yuck stickers to all the toxic cleaning products that we kept there when my sister was a toddler. Not when my brother and I were young. Just when my sister was a toddler. And even then, I'm watching my mom do this and I'm like, wouldn't it be more effective if we just put them somewhere that wasn't at eye level for her?
Exactly.
Like, wouldn't that be better than a sticker? She's like on her hands and knees down there, like toddler height. So, did it work? Nope. At least 2 peer-reviewed studies have suggested that Mr. Yuck stickers did not effectively keep children away from potential poisons, and they may have even attracted children, like Tide Pods, right? They made it too attractive.
It's a cute little character.
This is interesting, though. So a lot of the stickers would then become printed regionally because you could put the phone number of your local poison control.
But I think I do remember, like, having some kind of instruction about it at school. Like, someone came and talked to us and then sent us home with the stickers.
Yes, that's right.
And then I think I was probably of the rule following, you know, the rule follower that I was, you know, giving them to my mom and saying, you have to put this on all the poisons or, you know, Ronnie or I could die. And then my mom being like, I'll get to it. Kind of like, we need to have a fire plan. We need to have
here,
like a fire
drink. Yes, an escape plan.
Plan for the fire kind of thing. Like feeling super responsible. I feel like that was also this thing that was, maybe it was me personally, but weighed on me when I learned these things in school that were bad. And then I went home and they didn't like transitioned to home. Like,
but that tracks, Carolyn, that totally tracks. We become the responsible parents.
Yeah.
Right? And our parents are like, you don't need a fire ladder. You're fine.
We didn't have fire ladders when we were kids.
We were fine. We just jumped out the window. They're targeting us. They're scaring us, and we become the responsible parents. Why did they need to warn us? Because our parents weren't protecting us.
I know. Oh, my God. Yes. Oh, my God. That's the reason for the influx of PSAs in the 70s.
Right. Because our parents weren't doing their jobs.
Oh, my God. You're totally right.
That's therapy. We're having therapy today. Okay. Okay. Should we do number 7?
Let's do it.
Okay. The 7th most popular PSA as voted by the members of the Pop Culture Preservation Society is, dun, 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 it's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?
No, because our parents were irresponsible. They were drinking, like, you know, Doors and probably, you know, Clorox.
They were drinking cleaning fluids, and they were drinking and driving and jumping out of the window when there was a fire. So this was really a catchphrase more than it was a singular PSA, and it was used generally to kick off the evening news broadcast at various stations around the nation. Usually it was read by the news anchor to kick off the news. It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?
Where were we?
I know. Eventually, they got other TV and sports stars to record the messages to kick off the 10 p.m. newscast. For years, this happened. From the 1960s to the late 90s, this would kick off the news. People like Joan Rivers, Reggie Jackson, Andy Warhol. They must have had hundreds of stars. I know, Andy Warhol's like, it's 10 p.m., do you know where your children are? Like, some people were better at delivering the message than some were. Here's the answer to your question, Carolyn. The catchphrase was created in response to new curfew laws aimed at keeping kids off the streets. And it grew in popularity after a summer of extreme unrest in 1967. As we've just said, I also don't think it's a coincidence that this catchphrase was aimed at parents of Gen X kids. Notice it's not in rotation anymore. That's because we don't need it. We know where our children are. I know where little Parker is. He's at his fencing lesson, or he's at theater camp. Right? And then after that, he's got chess club, and then he's got math Olympics, right? And then he's got 90 hours to read of homework.
Read us 50 pages.
Yes. Before bed. There is literally no such thing as not knowing where your child is anymore. That's called an Amber Alert. This is the pendulum swing from our parents. Who regularly didn't know where we were. Regularly. And again, if you ask Linda, she would be like, what? I knew where you were. No, you didn't.
Yeah. I had a general idea, maybe like a 5-mile radius.
Are you in the neighborhood? Yeah, I was in the neighborhood. Was I at Lizzie's house? Was I at Christy's house? I don't know.
In the state somewhere.
Sure. Don't you remember your mom calling houses and being like, is Kristen there? And that's not a bad thing. That's okay. But that means she didn't know where I was. And again, I'm not casting dispersions at my mom because that was how it was. Yeah.
Yes.
Where's Kristen? I'll call Ann Chase's house and see if she's over there.
Right.
But that doesn't happen anymore. We know where our kids are.
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?
Hey, listeners, it's Carolyn. And I wanted to check in. It's 2025, you guys. How's everybody feeling? Well, I know for me, sometimes all of these hormonal changes that many of us are going through can be a real pain. And while there are natural hormonal changes that are going on through our bodies, did you know that there are also more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now? Yes, disruptors that can affect actually how our hormones function. They're in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare. And they all mess with our hormones. The good news is that we don't have to suffer through all of this anymore because now there's Hormone Harmony. And you've heard me talk about it. It's a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. You've heard me talk about how that menopause-induced brain fog has really messed with me at times, but I've really noticed a difference since I've taken Hormone Harmony, and even my sleep habits have gotten better. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is truly dedicated to making women's lives easier, and that means they only use science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and we are so excited to partner with Hormone Harmony. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PCPS for 15% off today.
Okay, coming in at number 6 is, I think, one of the most effective PSAs for me, at least, and actually for a lot of others, as Time magazine has listed this as one of the top 10 PSAs of all time. This is Like Father, Like Son, also known as, I learned it by watching you, okay? And this was created by the Partnership for Drug-Free America. launched in 1987. And this is the one, if you remember, that features a father confronting his son in his bedroom with a box. He opens it. You can't see what's in it, but you can see that there's some unspecified, you know, drug paraphernalia in there. And the boy's, you know, he's got his headphones on and he's, you know, the boy keeps trying to interrupt him like, I don't know what, but the dad's not listening. Where did you get it? Finally, he erupts and he says, "Who taught you how to do this stuff?" And the son finally is just so fed up and he shouts,
"You all right? I learned it by watching you."
And the father just responds with this kind, and he has the mustache, kind of this look of regret. And then you hear the narrator say, "Parents who use drugs have children who use drugs."
That's right.
Okay,
that's
brilliant, though.
It's brilliant. And also aimed at our parents and their bad parenting. So all of these, whether they're aimed at us or whether they're aimed at the adults, are really aimed at the adults.
Okay, moving on to number five, and we're going to lighten things up a little. And I am excited to talk about this next one because I get to recall an earworm that has been embedded in your brains loudly for decades.
When I'm slow on the draw and I need something to chaw, I hanker for a hunk of cheese.
So Time for Timer is a series of seven short PSAs that were broadcast on Saturday mornings on the ABC television network. That's interesting that it was only on ABC, starting in 1975, which these animated spots feature Timer. And I want to ask you guys, what do you think Timer is?
Is he a lemon?
Could be a lemon. People, when we post on social media, people are always like, is he a lemon with legs? Does anyone know?
Yeah, what is he? He's a pencil topper.
It looks exactly like a pencil topper. I was yesterday years old when I learned that Timer is an anthropomorphic circadian rhythm.
No, stop.
Yes, what? He is the self-proclaimed keeper of body time.
No. That's why his name's Timer? I always wondered that too. Yep. Like, what's Timer?
Two. Exactly. I don't know. Anthropomorphic circadian rhythm. Yeah.
How do you even personify circadian rhythm?
So his purpose basically is to keeper of your body time. So to help you eat healthy and to help you brush your teeth and to think of healthy snacks, right? So like I said, these PSAs ran on Saturday mornings during our cartoons starting in 1975, but Timer first appeared in the 1973 ABC after school special, The Incredible, Indelible, Magical, Physical Mystery Trip. Oh. In this special, he works inside the body of a man named Uncle Carl.
I think I remember that.
I do remember this. And he travels. He travels through the body. I remember
do not remember that at all. Okay, Uncle we might have Carl. To see if we can find that one on YouTube and put a link in.
Yep.
So Timer also then appears in the 1974 ABC After School special, The Magical Mystery Trip Through Little Red's Head, working inside a teenaged Red Riding Hood.
What?
I don't remember that.
It's a crazy, little drug-induced. Right?
The episodes ran until 1992, and there were seven of them. And I'm going to tell you the ones that I think are the most memorable. I Hanker for a Hunk of Cheese. We just heard that little ditty.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Where Timer is recast as a cowboy with a thick Western accent, and he suggests wagon wheels, which are sandwiches made with cheese slices and crackers, which is an easy, nutritious snack, everyone, which it actually is. I still eat that as a snack.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when Timer prepares one on a kitchen counter, he rolls it down the counter on its edge and exclaims, "Look, a wagon wheel." I don't know if I sound anything like Timer, but in my head I do.
Yeah, you do.
Okay, one of the other, I think, memorable ones was just entitled, "Have a Carrot." And it's where Timer is channeling W.C. Fields as an anthropomorphic circadian rhythm often does, channels W.C. Fields, and he assembles some nutritious in-between meal snacks like carrot sticks. The next one that I want to say is the one that to me is as memorable as the wagon wheel.
Is oh, I wonder if it's the one I am too.
Sunshine on a Stick.
Yes.
Timer
yes,
suggests
yes.
making ice pops with fruit juice, an ice tray, and toothpicks. And let me tell you, Timer, that shit's crap. It doesn't work.
Yes. I thought it was, he says 10 minutes. He says, like, put it in the freezer for 10 minutes. It didn't work.
No. Yeah. And my mom got so mad because orange juice went everywhere. And, you know, it's like, the top would be frozen, so you'd kind of think, yes. Oh, maybe the whole thing. And we had those metal ice cube trays that you had to, like, lift up that were sharp, and
lever. I lifted
it, and then orange juice went everywhere.
And then orange juice goes everywhere.
Yes. Oh, your finger would stick to it if your finger was damp at all. My problem was I would cover the ice cube tray with the Saran wrap, which, you know, doesn't stick to the side. I mean, that's
crap. Because it's in the freezer.
And I would try to poke the toothpick through, but it would poke the whole, like, all the Saran wrap, because the toothpick was never, like,
into
sharp enough.
Juice.
Yeah, the whole thing would go into the juice, and then you'd try to cut a slip, but then the toothpick would. And I know that a lot of you listening, like, are right with us, because anytime we've posted this on social media, you guys are always like, those ice cube things never worked. Also, the ice cube, if it did work, it's too heavy for your toothpick, and your toothpick
would just snap. Your toothpick is too little. It does not. Like, nobody tested this. Maybe a popsicle stick, but I remember that it was kind of dangerous, first of all, because it's pointy, and then it just didn't, it was top heavy. It was really, really top heavy. And I remember my mom, I remember checking on them, like, every three minutes to see if they were frozen. And my mom was like, what are you doing in the freezer every 3 minutes?
You know what? That's why Tupperware invented those really cool ones. They still sell today. The little popsicle makers. Yeah.
We have a big argument in my house. This drives Mike crazy, crazy. Whenever I sing the Hanker for a Hunk of Cheese song and I say, a slice, a slab, a chunka. And he's like, it's a hunka. He's just so angry that I'm not doing it the proper way. This is a big fight in our house.
Okay, because I'm not sure if you're wrong, because Brian knows all the words to that. In fact, this morning when I was printing out my notes, I was like, oh, sing the Time for Timer song, because it just cracks me up. But
I feel like he says a slice, a slab, a chunka.
I think it is.
Either way, he's mad that I'm doing it wrong and I'm not working hard enough to do it correctly. I think that's what bothers him the most, is I'm not working hard enough to do it correctly.
Well, if that's his biggest problem with you, then you know what? He's
no
doing okay.
Doubt. No doubt.
We're moving on to number four, and I would argue this is the most memorable of them all, probably because of its simplicity, and one that has had a long life.
This is your brain. This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?
This PSA is officially titled Frying Pan, but is also known as Fried Egg, or Any Questions? And the 30-second original version is from 1987, and it fit right in the Just Say No campaign of the 80s.
Yeah, that's right.
This shows a man. He's in the kitchen. He asks if there's anyone out there who still doesn't understand the dangers of drug abuse. It's just so simple and brilliant, right? Yeah. Holds up the egg and just says, this is your brain. Points to the frying pan. This is drugs. Cracks open the egg and it just immediately starts sizzling. And he says, this is your brain on drugs. Looks right at the camera and says, any questions? And so I think that was really impactful.
It's the any questions. I think it's his deadpan, any questions. Like, basically what he's saying is, are you a dumbass?
Exactly.
None of us wanted to be a dumbass.
No, because there should not be any dumbass.
Right.
Drugs will, your brain will fry. However, I remember this one, the version which featured 18-year-old actress Rachel Lee Cook, who, as 10 years earlier, she holds up the egg and says, this is your brain. She lifts up the frying pan with the words, and this is heroin. Then she places the egg on the kitchen counter and says, this is what happens to your brain after snorting heroin, and just slams the pan down on the egg. She lifts the pan back up and says, and this is what your body goes through, in reference to the remnants of the smashed egg, which is now dripping from the bottom of the pan and it's down her arm. And then this is the part that I remember. She goes, wait, it's not over yet. And proceeds to smash everything in the kitchen with the frying pan in a rage, yelling, this is what your family goes through, and your friends, and your money, and your job, and your self-respect, and your future. And then she just ends with, and your life. She drops the pan on the counter and just says, any questions?
I've got goosebumps.
Kristen's face right now. Do you remember that one?
I don't remember this, but your description of it has got goosebumps all over my
body.
It's brilliant. That's just really brilliant.
And then there was a third one, and this was in 2016. So like I said, this is a long-lasting PSA. I don't remember this one, but it says it's a loose remake, basically, of the first one. Shows the egg in a human hand stating, this is your brain, alongside a frying pan that the other hand is pointing to, saying, this is drugs. The egg is cracked, fried in the pan. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions? But now this is followed by scenes of teens, some of who state, yeah, I have questions. Prescription drugs aren't as bad as street drugs, right? Weed's legal, isn't it? Drinking is worse than smoking weed, isn't it? Why is heroin so addictive? Molly just makes you feel happy, right? I have questions. Mom, Dad, did you ever try drugs? The narrator returns to say, they're going to ask. Be ready. And I feel like this is so great because I feel like it's reflecting the times, like how by 2016, we were more comfortable talking about difficult things and asking questions. It was more, it was just more in the norm, right? And it was more norm for us to want to encourage our kids to ask questions. Right, I know that, like you
and
said,
have
just
the conversation.
Caroline, we all certainly encouraged our kids. Right. There's nothing you can't ask us about this or whatever. And so I just find that, like you said at the beginning, where he just goes, any questions? Like, no, there shouldn't be any questions, dumbass. This is your brain on drugs. Mm-hmm. No, look at those questions that in the 2016 PSA they're asking. But wait, I do actually have questions. Weed's legal, or wait, does the, is this one worse than this one? And they're going to ask, be ready.
And it does reflect the more complex times as well, because if you think about when we were in high school, there was drinking, there was pot smoking, and maybe if you had a lot of money, there was cocaine. But beyond that, it was pretty simple. Maybe I'm ignorant. I don't know. But it just seems like in 2016, there were a lot more things and a lot more issues.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that ad kind of taps into the nostalgia of it. Like for us as the parents, I mean, that's kind of a message to us. And we're remembering, like how we felt when we saw it. And just, as you said, the evolution and, oh my gosh, those are legit questions. And there's a lot more out there than those three things you just mentioned, Kristen.
And now we're talking to a new generation of parents. It's not the boomer parents anymore. Now we're the Gen X parents, and we are hyper aware of where our children are and what they're doing. And we want to be ready. We want to be ready.
Yes. So coming in at number three, everybody, is Woodsy Owl.
I love Woodsy Owl. Give a hoot.
Oh, our dear friend Woodsy Owl in his little jaunty Robin Hood-esque outfit, right?
Yes, so cute.
And can't you sing the song in your head?
Give a hoot, don't pollute, never be a dirty bird. In the city or in the woods, help keep America looking good.
We were introduced to Woodsy Owl on September 15th, 1971, as a part of an anti-littering campaign from the United States Forest Service. Okay.
Thank you,
Don't you guys remember, like, I don't think litter was even a concept for our parents. I don't know that they even understood, you know, dropping stuff on the ground. Not that they did, but litter and pollution were just a huge thing, like the litter bags. Don't you remember the bags? And we'd keep one in our car. And
just litter, the word litter is such a 1970s term.
But then the word and the term litter bug was
litter
horrible.
Bug. Well, yeah,
don't be a litter bug. You're a litter bug. Right. And that was like, that could make me cry. Yeah, I know. Didn't mean to. It just fell out of my pocket. Michelle's a litter bug.
I think that these campaigns, the anti-litter ones, were very effective. There is just a huge amount of guilt and shame I feel if maybe something I had didn't make it into the trash can. Like, I'm quick to go pick it up. I could never just throw something out the window in the car.
Never.
I mean, that was just
you would never drop something on the ground.
Right.
Never.
It was very, very effective. The genius of the campaign was Woodsy's ability to connect with children, instilling a sense of environmental stewardship in young minds. He wasn't just preaching. He was like a friend and a guide. I mean, he was like Robin Hood, just jaunting along. Yes.
Help Woodsy spread the word. I remember that. That's
Don't
how it started.
Never
be a dirty bird. Mm-hmm. It was all happy. It was so cute.
It was very happy.
And they were
all
skipping along with him.
Yes, in a line, remember?
Yes.
He's like the Pied Piper.
Yeah.
And he was very effective. And I remember getting like coloring sheets a lot. I don't know if there was always a contest every year, like a coloring contest of Woodsy, and then you sent it to the Forest Service. But interestingly enough, I'm so glad he's an owl, because the Forest Service debated some other options for the mascot instead of an owl. We could have had a raccoon, a ladybug, a moose, or a rainbow trout. And can you just imagine a rainbow trout with a little Robin Hood cap on him, trying to tell us?
It'd be like,
don't pollute.
Come up out of his mouth. It'd be awful. Those big fish lips.
And Woodsy lives on. He is still a mascot with the U.S. Forest Service and has become a rallying cry, really, for all generations for environmental action. I mean, ever since our generation came about. I want to point out that we are so aware of litter and the environment that a lot of the conversations happening now with maybe taking back some of the environmental regulations that have been in place, and we're just like, No, this is like part of how we grew up with, this is wrong. We can't, we can't do these things.
What about Woodsy? What would Woodsy say?
Exactly.
WWWD. What would Woodsy do?
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, honestly, I think it's one of the reasons I get so enraged. I want to say exactly that. Like, what would Woodsy do? This is wrong. We learned this since we were kids. Just seems so
common
sense.
And this was part of like the way they were able to encourage us to not litter and to pick up and to clean up and to protect the earth. This was where the happy warrior came from, right? I remember being on vacation at Crater Lake National Park, big camping vacation, right? And if you went to the ranger station, you could get a big Woodsy Owl plastic bag. And then if you picked up litter and you brought it back to the ranger station, you'd get like a patch for your jean jacket. And I just remember feeling like Woodsy Owl would be so proud of me. And it became quite a contest. Like, my brother and I were on a mission. I did not see any scenery because I was looking at the ground the whole time.
What an effective campaign. Totally. For them.
I had my green plastic bag with me wherever we went, and I was manically looking for garbage to fill up that bag. I wanted
it's like
Woodsy
you
to
wanted someone to have littered just so you have something
can somebody
to pick
please
up.
Litter so I can win?
Probably some of our issues today are because the landfills are so full of green plastic bags from the 70s.
Oh my God, well, the irony.
They probably weren't recyclable.
You know what? I'm just putting this together right now, you guys. I personally have a lot of difficulty with the notion of landfills, with the image of landfills. I'm terrified. I'm like, what if they fill up? And then what happens? I mean, pretty soon the whole earth is going to be covered with landfills. And so my garbage in my kitchen takes up too much emotional space in my brain. And sometimes I'll see Mike like put some recycling in the garbage and I'm like, oh my God, what have you just done? What did you do?
I know.
And it's literally like an injury to me. And it's a fear. It comes back to fear. It's not that I'm a do-gooder. It's not that I'm self-righteous. I literally fear this image I have of the earth being covered with garbage.
I think that we might have been given that image in some ways back then. Because I have that same image. And I too say, what's going to happen?
Like,
how are we going to do this? If it's not going to go anywhere, where's it going to go? Kind of a thing.
It's not going into space. Like, what's going to happen?
And it's not disintegrating, obviously. And I agree. There's this kind of level of fear underlying garbage.
It's an anxiety that I own this as an anxiety. And some people don't have this anxiety. And I'm not saying that I'm better than other people for thinking about it more because it does come from a place of anxiety.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot, as we've talked about, a lot of these campaigns really kind of took advantage of our fears and knowing that is a motivating, there's maybe no singular motivating factor for people greater than fear.
And yet they didn't mislead us either. I mean, this is true that eventually we're going to run out of room and we're all going to be living on a garbage heap.
Exactly. And they did it with scary images, which, you know, left
apparently
their mark.
Worked.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Exactly. So Woodsy definitely left his mark on us, as would this gentleman in our number two spot, Smokey Bear. As one of our followers pointed out rather emphatically that there is no the in his name. He is Smokey Bear. Like, his first name is Smokey and his last name is Bear. We wouldn't call Kristen the Nilsson, or Michelle the Newman. So if you get nothing else out of today's episode, you leave with the knowledge that it's Smokey Bear.
I can't.
Okay.
I can't. It doesn't roll off the tongue. It just doesn't. And I know, I understand, I do have the information now because I did go deep on this at one point because I was so bothered by the fact that, yes, indeed, his name is officially Smokey Bear. That really is his name. And like, well, how come this whole generation of children is calling him Smokey the Bear? It's because of a song. Because the rhythm of the song was they couldn't go Smokey Bear, Smokey Bear. So they went Smokey the Bear, Smokey the Bear. That was his theme song, and they couldn't be Smokey E Bear.
Smokey the Bear,
Smokey the Bear,
prowling and a growling and a sniffing the air. He can find a fire before it starts to flame. That's why they call him Smokey. That was how he got his name.
And I don't even know that I knew the song about Smokey the Bear. I always called him Smokey the Bear, too. Like, I almost thought the bear was one word. Like,
yeah, totally. Smokey the Bear.
Now, I mean, if you were on any kind of trivia show, if you're on Jeopardy, I don't think they would give you credit for the right answer.
Okay,
if
that's,
you said Smokey the Bear.
We do have to ask that question. Yeah. Alex Trebek said that I didn't get Smokey the Bear right, I would go to court.
What's the tagline you remember from our friend Smokey Bear?
Only you. Mm-hmm. Can prevent forest fires. Again, right. No pressure.
No, it's right. Only
yeah, so
you.
The big finger.
That's right. And you was all, like, that word was all capital letters. Mm-hmm. Y-O-U. Yeah, again, mm-hmm. Pressure. Not much. Excuse me. That's really scary.
That's a lot of responsibility.
The little cartoon, I went back and watched one of them, and it's like, you know, showing the family, making sure you put out your campfire, and it says, don't be responsible for forest fire. That scared the bejesus out of me. Thinking, like, I didn't want to be responsible for,
right.
You know, not pushing my chair into my desk when we left for lunch.
Right. Like, what is your responsibility?
I couldn't handle what that would feel like to be the one responsible of an entire forest burning down. Well, Smokey the Bear is all over the state of Colorado, as he is, I'm sure, in northern, you know, he was in northern Minnesota, where you'd see, you know, fire danger high today, fire
right.
danger. They still use him mm-hmm. today.
Yeah, they do. Isn't that interesting? He's on mm-hmm. the big sign where they put the level of fire danger. And that makes me so happy that this bear is still relevant and he's still in charge of telling us who's responsible for fire.
That's right. And you guys, he is looking pretty good. He turned 80 this year. Okay. Can you believe that? And you know, it's kind of a sad story. I don't know if you remember, but he was born in 1944 amidst the backdrop of a devastating wildfire season, which caused him to be orphaned. So when they introduced him the public, yes, they said it's because of these awful wildfires that Smokey's, you know, parents burned up and died. And so he's this orphan. I mean, they probably didn't say it like that. But yeah, so we had this like, oh my gosh, like not realizing that our behaviors and these fires that
could kill his parents. It's like
awful.
Bambi.
Listen, that just adds such another level of fear to little mm-hmm. Michelle's, like, you're going to orphan thousands of animals.
Yeah.
And I want to go give Smokey Bear a big hug right now. He was an orphan the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was. Sad. And you know what? It might be kind of fun to give him a hug right now because 10 years ago when he turned 70, he got a little work done. Okay, he's a little more chiseled these days. Our friend Smokey isn't quite as pudgy and stuff.
He was a little rotund, wasn't he?
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's looking a little buff, I gotta say, these days. So
buff Smokey.
Good
he's
for
got,
him.
I think he's got biceps.
Mm-hmm.
I think he might.
Some pecs. He's got some nice pecs.
Good for you, Smokey. Mm-hmm. Now get out there of yourself.
Sexualize an orphan bear. That's what our society's come to. We need to sexualize the bear. Maybe people will pay more attention and won't start fires if he's sexy and telling them that fire danger is high.
Because
that's a pudgy
who we
bear,
are
they're
going
to be like, suck it, you pudgy bear. I'm not putting out my campfire. But if I want to impress the buff bear,
now I'm going to put out my campfire.
I'm going to put out my campfire. I want to be in good favor of that bear.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Now, without further ado, in the number one spot, we have Crying Indian.
Oh, my God.
I know. Yes. And that's kind of what it's referred to. Crying.
Yeah,
that's what it's called.
That's
right. Mm-hmm. And we know you all have that image in your head right now, as if I even need to describe the ad, but I'm going to. You'll remember the ad depicted a Native American man in traditional garb paddling a canoe through a polluted river. And we don't know it's polluted at first. We first just see him paddling, and then the camera pulls back, and we see that he is in this polluted river.
And then, after he's out of his canoe, you see him standing on the side of the road while traffic is careening by at increasingly faster speeds. And then there's a big white station wagon, just like the one you had, when you were a kid, and as it careens by, the mom rolls down the window and throws all their McDonald's trash out the window.
All of it. Yes.
Who does that?
I don't know.
Monsters.
And then a single tear rolls down the man's cheek. Oh my gosh, you guys. Also, like, fear is a powerful motivator. This motivated us kind of out of shame and responsibility and guilt.
And now, the shame.
Yes. And mm-hmm. the responsibility, like, which this is what I talk about in therapy all the time. Like, I'm responsible for someone's feelings. Like, mm-hmm. I made somebody sad and cry. Mm-hmm. Okay. You want to talk about motivating people? That might motivate me more than fear to
I
know
agree.
That mm-hmm. I did something that
yes.
made somebody cry.
Yeah.
And it probably affected a lot of people because the emotional impact that ad had has made it one of the most memorable PSAs of its time, mm-hmm. and which is probably why it comes in at number one on our countdown.
Yes. Because we all felt like shit
yes.
after seeing that poor man's face with the tear
yes.
coming down his face.
And any time I would see occasionally someone throw something out of a car window or see someone litter, I would say to myself or kind of out loud, like, they're making the Indian cry.
Yes.
Which yeah. that's like how I always mm-hmm. thought of, you know, somewhere that man is crying and I don't want to be a part of that. As much as we love that ad and it definitely did what it wanted to do, we have to recognize that while this was an impactful and memorable campaign to us, its stereotypical portrayal of Native Americans,
yeah.
as well as its use of a non-Native American actor in the role, highlighted the appropriation of Native American culture for commercial and political purposes.
It really
because
did.
If you remember, mm-hmm. we've shared this information in previous episodes, but the actor who played the Native American in the canoe and on the side of the road was Iron Eyes Cody. He passed himself off as Native American, but he was actually Italian.
Yes. It's so bad.
It's Sicilian, yeah.
It's so bad.
I know, but it's so bad that he, you know, tried to, I mean, he lied about it.
He lied. That was his persona. And he actually wore that garb like in his daily life. It's weird. It's weird.
It is so weird. Mm-hmm. So the two things can be true at one time. This can be memorable and impactful, and mm-hmm. this ad can come up as number one in our PSA countdown. But yet now we can also recognize that, yes, it was cultural appropriation. It was mm-hmm. not something that we would be acceptable today, thank goodness, that we have come to realize that this is not the right thing to do.
You can even look at, you know, the beginning of the ad when he's in the canoe and everything like that, and they have these drum beats, and it's supposed to sound like a traditional powwow or something like that. I can mm-hmm. 100% assure you that was a white guy in a studio going, do something that sounds like Indians do.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
It probably was not anything traditional or real, and that is the very definition of appropriation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this campaign can be both memorable and a significant landmark in history and also serve as a reminder of the sensitive and respectful representation for marginalized communities in media and advertising. So mm-hmm. not even just the Native American population, but it can promote a discussion about how we have used different ethnicities and nationalities and marginalized communities in ways that were not right, just to sell mm-hmm. a piece of, you know, clothing or whatever.
Right. Right.
So
exactly.
not good.
And yet I would love to have a discussion of people our age and what kind of feelings they got from that ad. Right. Not even what the result was or how you live your life today, but did you feel shame and anguish? Did you cry? I was
yes.
fighting tears when I would see his face.
Oh,
I can remember
yes.
being very, mm-hmm. very young, but getting it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that's
I got it.
Punch.
I got what the meaning, like the larger meaning of it
and
was. It wasn't just don't pollute. I actually got.
Yeah.
Yeah, the
everything
repercussions
supposed,
of mm-hmm. the police, like, right, it was real-time
well, wrecking their land, basically. Like, what have you done? What are you doing?
And I did feel very angry at adults. This ad campaign made me feel like it was the kids who were trying to convince the parents who were throwing the litter out the garbage. And you're like, Mom, stop it. You're going to make him cry. Right?
Again? The parents.
I know.
You guys, I feel much better about us after
I do.
This.
Really, that we're just functioning humans.
Yep. Yes.
You know?
Yes.
It is crazy that how that was just so, that was such a motivating factor in these
mm-hmm.
ads.
Yeah. I think we also have to acknowledge that there are almost none of these that would be made today. Not even Woodsy Owl would be made today because they'd be afraid of offending people who don't believe in climate change, right? Everything has become an issue. And it's worth asking the question, why doesn't society feel the need to warn people about things anymore? You know, per the it's 10 p.m., do you know where your children are at? Maybe it's because parents today do the warning. We do the warning, as in they supervise their children in ways that 70s and 80s parents do not. And I'll also point out that banning is not the same as warning. Banning takes something away. Warning gives you the power to make good choices, which we clearly were very obsessed with doing. Right. But as nutty and out of line as many of these ads were, we don't have anything in media today that's meant to enlighten us about anything. Misguided or not, there's nothing encouraging anything. Really, all we see in media is selling. And that's it.
Yeah.
And I'll leave you with that to ponder this week. Thank you for listening today, and we will see you next time.
And a huge thank you goes out to our Patreon members who take their support of this podcast to the next level with their monthly donations that make it possible for us to keep on trucking. Today, we are giving a huge shout out to patrons Marsha, M.P., Diane, Richard, Laura, Shannon, Jen, Teresa, Dawn, and Pamela. Thank you all so much. And to all of our patrons, we love you. We appreciate you. And if you'd like to explore the fun perks our patrons get as a thank you for their support, just go to patreon.com, patreon.com, and put Pop Culture Preservation Society up in the search bubble.
And one of the best ways you can support us is by rating and reviewing the podcast on whatever platform you listen. Those ratings help the podcast be shown to more people and in turn, more ears tuning in. And then more of us are helping to preserve the pop culture nuggets from our youth.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast, responsibly, metaphorically, and I will take away all of your keys if I have to, courtesy of the cast of Three's Company. Two good times.
Two happy days.
Two Little House on the Prairie.
Cheers. Cheers.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on trucking, and may the force be with you.